Hello and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. In the 18th century, Paris was known as the City of Light. By the end of the 20th century, it was where Claire McFarlane was almost extinguished after she was raped, beaten, and left for dead. It took her 16 years to get justice from a French court, and she had to foot the bill. At the end of it, her ordeal brought her a new mission, a four-year worldwide beach run to inspire survivors and the organizations that serve them. Month 8 finds her here in Hawaii and in this morning this in our studio. Hi there.
Hi, Beth Ann.
Good to talk to you.
It's wonderful to be here.
I can imagine. I mean, knowing what you have been through, to be in a place where you not only have safety but the ability to influence others who will be able to help people like you, who have had such a horrendous and unthinkable, unimaginable ordeal. I don't want to have you relive all of that because you've probably had to do that enough over the last many years. But as you're now traveling the world, running on beaches and talking with organizations and other women who have survived, what are you finding most that you're carrying with you from country to country?
It's a really good question. It's been an eye-opening journey, and U.S. soil is country 17, so I'm only very much at the beginning of the journey, but I've already seen so much and heard so many different kinds of stories. There's a very common thread when it comes to sexual violence, and that's the taboo and the silence that really shrouds it. There's a real fear to talk about, and I think survivors carry a lot of guilt and blame. So that's something I see everywhere. Other than that, I'm seeing quite a lot of difference, and some countries have surprised me. I went to Malaysia just recently. I was there probably about a month ago, and I was blown away by the services they provide in their hospitals, which is somewhere where I hadn't expected to see something like that. So it's been a very interesting journey so far.
And heartening from what you've just said about what you didn't expect to find in a certain place around the world. But when you look at where Hawaii is, you've been talking to organizations on Maui. Have you been surprised with what we do or don't do here?
I suppose it's quite interesting. I was in Maui for a week, and I've already heard stories from about 10 survivors, and half of those survivors didn't even know about the existence of the services in Maui, which for me really stood out as sort of a gap or a breakdown in awareness. However, meeting with the services, it's been great to see that there's a really large amount of services available, an extremely proactive system. So when someone does reach out for help, they don't necessarily have to report the crime, but they can still get help. And I suppose that's where I would see a need for improvement in Maui and maybe potentially around the islands of Hawaii, is that people know that they have got services available to them, and it doesn't always mean that they have to go out and be involved in the criminal justice system. They can still get help.
The idea of having a system that is more survivor-centered is one that we talk about a lot as we look at those people who have been victimized by others in a sexual context. And looking at that through that lens, as you've only obviously been in 17 countries, but other places where you have talked to NGOs and survivors and just kept your ear to the ground, is there a way of being able to, in that limited context, pen where we are now in being truly survivor-centered?
That's the journey has been that for me, which has been really important, is coming at it from the perspective of a survivor. I walked the road, I think, the full journey of being a survivor of rape, from the actual attack itself, through the medical process, through the forensics, through the police involvement, then not catching him and then catching him years later through DNA and then throwing through a justice system, and faced constant beating and almost like being You know, at times I say I was interrogated by the system. I never felt like I was treated as a victim or this lack of kindness. And unfortunately, I still see that happening everywhere. We tend to forget about the victim in the process, and, you know, it becomes more about the outcome or getting a criminal outcome in court. And the victim's isn't a human anymore. They become this object in a process. And I think that that's what, for me, this journey has been really important, is to walk through and see through the eyes of a survivor where the system is really helping and where there's some real needs and gaps. You know, I've already seen here in my time in Hawaii and the US with regards to how funding works. And sadly, I think that does fail the victim.
How so?
Well, from what I understand, the funding process is a 3 to 4 year process, which means that an organization that receives funding, they have 3 or 4 years to use it. Then they actually have to resubmit an application, and everyone has to do that. And there's no guarantee that it's the same organization that will get the funding. So what that means is that if they're providing services to survivors of sexual violence, which will involve all sorts of services, there might be medical support, advocacy through court, counseling, that organization stops doing that in their local area and someone else does it. And that creates a real breakdown because people don't know who's doing what, and then even the public has no idea where they need to go.
That seems to argue for better networking among organizations and to really see how many overlaps there are that might be disentangled, or to be able to use whatever funds are available in the most comprehensive way. We only have a couple more minutes to spend with you. Is there something that you think that we need to hear beyond what we've just talked about concerning victims of rape and healing from all of that, which clearly this has become for you? Is there a message that you want to leave us with?
Yeah, definitely. It was a question that got asked to me in the Solomon Islands. I actually shared my story with the public prosecution and defense lawyers as a form of informal training, and we opened the floor up to any kind of question. And they asked the question about when the story from a victim changes, from when they interviewed immediately by the police and then maybe the next day or a couple of days later the story might change. And it was for them it was a great deal of confusion, and they tended to doubt the victim's story. And that sparked for me something that's really important in a message, is that the trauma from sexual violence is extremely traumatic. I don't think anyone on earth wants that to happen to them. And it shakes your world, and you're trying to cope and survive in the first few hours. And so that the message is that it's going to be different for everyone, and it's not linear. So it's going to change. And that's part of the healing as well.
I want to wish you all the best as you continue your journey, and stay in touch with us and let us know how you find other policies around the world as you're talking to other NGOs and other countries. And we'll plan to talk with you as you move through that.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Claire McFarlane is a rape survivor and founder of Footsteps to Inspire. Her mission is to run more than 3,000 kilometers of beach across 184 countries to support survivors of sexual violence and to raise awareness.